What are four principles of grand strategy that we should have in order to become a true master of forethought? Why is it important, and why is it a characterization that a grand strategist is someone who is seen as cold and detached? But why is it also important to not grow drunk on our victory as a grand strategist and always look toward the next goal using flexibility as our greatest strength? Hello, and welcome back to Stoic Spirituality, a podcast where I look through, analyze, and dissect various books, quotes, and experiences that I've had over the last few years. My name is Juggan, and I'm a student of the human experience trying to spread some knowledge out to the rest of the world. And so this episode is kind of the second part in the two-part series regarding grand strategy. Through this episode, I hope to discuss some important facets or some important parts that we discussed from the previous episode regarding grand strategy, and then continue our discussion into four important principles that kind of make up our overall grand strategy, completing it with a little bit of a stoic and a spiritual sprinkle on top of the end of this episode. So let's begin. So kind of summarizing a little bit of grand strategy in the past. So back then, with grand strategy, we used to kind of have an animal and a rational part of our brain. Evolutionarily speaking, what separates humans from the rest of the animal kingdom is the amount of depth and kind of investment our evolutionary self has put into the generation of a rational prefrontal cortex compared to that of other animals. While similar mammals like monkeys or even whales or dolphins also have a similar investment, our rational thinking is really what separates us and puts us at the top of our food chain. However, there is still the evolutionary part of us that has an animalistic, irrational portion of our brain. And so a lot of what we find ourselves in conflict between is between our rational sense of self and our irrational and emotional sense of self. And in this kind of new world of social media, instant gratification and dopamine, that kind of animal portion of our brain is gaining more prevalence. That extended vision, that prudence, that forethought, and the knowledge of the future in great depth and detail is kind of being eclipsed, is being taken over by this rash, irrational, animalistic portion inside of us. And so one kind of ideological figure that is kind of illustrated in Greek mythology is Odysseus. So while there are stories of Odysseus doing irrational things, the kind of stereotypical prudent man is one who conquers the rational, who is in control of his emotions and uses the idea of forethought, kind of like when he slips into the room full of these suitors as a beggar, waiting for the right moment to win the challenge by shooting an arrow through seven rings and revealing himself to be Odysseus. So you may think that when you see your wife being courted by 100 suitors all at once, that your first instinct would be to charge into the room and yell and get really mad and create a big scene in order to assert the fact that you are back at home. However, this potentially will lead to your destruction and your assassination in the case of Odysseus. So what he does instead is he kind of receives the disguise from the Greek goddess of a beggar and kind of detaches himself from the overall scenario, kind of cutting off the and curtailing the emotion of the situation that might have caused him to charge in rashly and boldly, and instead be a prudent, cold man with the detachment and the true vision of knowing what to do properly. And so what comes with this idea of knowing what to do properly is not taking yourself so seriously. And this seems counterintuitive to what you may think, because a grand strategist must look at everything comprehensively and understand every single facet of every single plan that they're doing. However, the paradoxical necessity to not take yourself so seriously is more in the sense of humility. So humility and ego kind of stand at opposite ends of a spectrum. And a grand strategist must be aware that his ego is the source of many of his irrational actions, a source of an outpouring of emotion that people later categorize as "that was not me" or "that was not who I really am." However, by adding a sense of laughability, by adding a sense of humor and levity to a situation, you allow yourself to temper your ego and look at the world through the eyes of a prudent but humble man, doing what is necessary, not for the sake of boosting your own ego, but because this is the plan that will make you the most victorious. And so now that we kind of understand the emotion versus rationality, there's one other facet of strategy that is important to look at. The same way that our lives are not really a linear line, but is rather a web where one word we say to one person, or one quote per se we say to one person, can spawn a set of thoughts in their head, creating a theory in their head and a philosophy in their head that they eventually espouse out to a few people who kind of spin off their own interpretations, ideals, or attribute certain quotes to their own life. Strategy is a very web-like, non-linear kind of methodology. Because we think that a failure means a setback. We think that a failure means that we must continue on the same path. And we always look at strategy as one single goal, reachable by only one single path, with one set of objectives. However, this is a recipe for disaster, because it's kind of like the quote, putting all your eggs in one basket. The idea of strategy is backup plans. The idea of strategy is kind of offshoots, deflections, and an understanding that if something is meant to go wrong, or if something can go wrong, it most likely will. Murphy's Law. But the power of a grand strategist as opposed to a strategist is one who has many weapons, quote unquote, at his disposal, being able to look deeply into themselves and the world around them, understanding what people will do in response to something or a situation, and what people will act in response to that. For example, if you want to kind of use a work analogy for this, you're trying to get to the kind of end of a project or presentation. However, you have a roadblock in the form of someone who wants to take credit for your actions, who wants to kind of demean your work and damage your reputation. A regular strategist may kind of put more vesting, or like put more like investment into their own project and kind of just charge through, kind of ignoring the damage this one person could do. However, a grand strategist would find a way to mollify this person, having predicted from a lot of forethought that this kind of situation might or would arise, and eventually get to their end goal, not allowing for any mistakes that could spawn greater problems in the long run to persist. And sometimes, remember, you will use things like knowledge and understanding about those around you to get what you want. And that is the idea of seeing things clearly. But this vision could be clouded, and can be clouded, because there are many other things that could potentially factor into your final decisions that you cannot be aware of. And so a strategist kind of seeks to control everything and looks at everything that he cannot control as consistent factors that will not change in a linear sense. However, a grand strategist will allow for these many fluid factors they have no control over and work toward accounting for them in their overall plan. And the reversal, one potential reversal of this, is growing drunk on your own success. So a strategist will look for a goal, will look to finish something or get something completed, and then they will make it to the end, grow drunk on their victory, and lose track of what they fought for the entire time. However, a grand strategist will have planned for the eventual victory and will have understood that they should temper whatever they're doing and not be so kind of drunk on their own success. And this leads back to the point I said before about the levity and the kind of laughability that one who is a grand strategist should have. For the spawn of a very successful project or a very successful plan is happiness and confidence in your own abilities. However, what results from an overdose of confidence is ego, conceit, and pride. And these are damaging characteristics in the long run for your own self. And the quintessential game that kind of illustrates grand strategy is chess. So a common strategist, we like to say common to kind of differentiate between a grand strategist and a regular strategist, but a common strategist would have a snapshot of the board in front of them, would see their opponent acting in some way, and would react accordingly to kind of save their pawns and maximize how many pieces they take, and so on and so forth, just like in chess. But a grand strategist will understand that the end goal is a checkmate of a king and the winning of the game, not necessarily maximizing their pieces. So they might sacrifice a few important pieces, pawns or knights or bishops, in order to achieve their end goal. And so why chess I see as a quintessential game is that there are so many ways that this game can go. There are so many ways that life can be played. And if you react to situations instead of responding to them and understanding what role they play in your overall plan, you may be strategic, but you are not someone who sees the whole picture. You are not someone who sees the big web. You are not someone who sees many steps in advance to see what things could arise when you move your pieces in a certain way. And that's what differentiates a grand strategist from a strategist. And so now let's go into kind of four principles that can help you maximize your strategy. Four kind of tenets that you can adhere to get to where you want to get to. So the first one is focus on the war, not the battle. Similarly to how we talked about, our first step is to kind of outline our end goal, is to outline where we want everything to end up at, to find out our clear purpose or clear goal in our head. Our emotions have a very powerful effect of drawing us off course, trying to celebrate little wins that mean nothing in the long run. May it be fame, or may it be temporary sources of money at the cost of reputation, or even something like temporary security to give yourself peace of mind. But this unbalances us from our true goal. And our emotions will plead us to take an easier option. Our insecurities will beg us to give up for the sake of temporary happiness. But it's always important to understand that with a clearly defined purpose and understanding that there will be setbacks, failures, and roadblocks in our way, we can find ourselves doing actions toward the war effort as opposed to a temporary satisfaction of a battle effort. Because one is based on prudent forethought and one is based on egoic necessity to win no matter what. And so an example of this is when Lyndon B. Johnson disapproved a bill from Texas for civil rights. And as a result, while he may have decreased in popularity in a red state like Texas, someone like John F. Kennedy saw his potential, saw him as someone who was kind of a harbinger of change, and decided to choose him on his campaign. So in the case of someone who was focused on the initial battle at hand, they would choose to see the fact that they are supporting something that will cause them disapproval amongst everyone else as a bad thing, and would instead give up the idea of fighting back against a bill of this sort that would be deeply unpopular in the state you were in. However, Lyndon B. Johnson saw beyond that initial craving, that initial understanding of disapproval, and predicted the fact that he would be noticed by the near future president of the United States and would springboard himself into popularity. So some objectives, if you kind of realize them without fully thinking them through, can hurt you in the long run. But if you account for everything and allow for something to develop as a part of your plan and are calm, cool, and rational in such creations, these little events will not have the ability to throw you off in terms of your direction for the future. The next thing is kind of linked to fighting the war instead of the battle, which is widening your perspective. Similarly to how we discussed how strategy is linear, widening your perspective is one of the key tenets of having grand strategy. It's the idea of seeing something in the future, in space and time, further than the enemy does. And this vision of foresight is unnatural, because we are used to living in the present, and a lot of spiritual texts claim and illustrate the benefits of living in the present. But we must widen our overall experience, subjectively speaking, to include other factors. We must widen ourselves to this field of objectivity, because the better your strategies in the long run in that field, the better you will do in seeing the big picture and understanding all the facets to a master plan. So remember that the best way of looking in the eyes or understanding other people is to fill in their shoes, is to look at the world as they look at it, widening your perspective not only for your own sense of self, but to shift your perspective into other people, seeing what their motives are, understanding what actions they will take to boost said motives, and also understanding how they will kind of layer that with the sense of people-pleasing or flattery or whatever you may call it. And so what's important is that you must understand what interests people are promoting, look at their perspective, look at their war that they're fighting, look at the battles that they're going for. You must attune yourself to their eyes and shift your perspective accordingly so that you account for all that and reach your objective regardless. The next step in grand strategy is sever the roots. In a world filled with social media, a large source of our problem is appearances that are placed, kind of thin veneers of an illusion that people place, and the most important platform where that even happens is social media. And so to become a grand strategist, you must trace people back to their roots. You must look behind or beyond the kind of illusion or veneer that they put in terms of the words they speak or the kind of like illusion they portray over all of us. And you must look to who they are as a person. Never take appearances that people provide for reality and uncover the roots of who they are to strategize properly. Because everyone has a mask. Everyone is wearing a social mask to kind of like hide who they are as a person and portray the best version of themselves. And it's our responsibility as grand strategists to see dangers as they sprout. And the only way we can do that is by seeing people for who they are. And you need to cut these roots down before they get too big. However, people that are very good at hiding their true intentions, motives, and emotions will be very good at growing without your knowledge. And the grand strategist will know the value of said preemptive action. And finally, the fourth one is take the indirect route to your goal. And this is also another principle that differentiates a strategist from a grand strategist. So a lot of your benefit and a lot of what makes you a grand strategist as a person is not your ability to follow the predetermined path and follow the path that everyone would expect for you to take and would be ready for in terms of your enemies. It's kind of going in a different path, using different tactics, different methods that no one would expect, and preventing your opponent from seeing the purpose of these actions to get to where you want to get to. So if you look at the game like chess, one example of something that people could do is by sacrificing a piece that the other opponent may see as an important piece to capture, but is rather a setup for you to kind of engage a bigger plan that you have in mind. So what you kind of have to do is you have to visualize your moves in advance and set the chessboard according to your knowledge, according to your expectations, and according to what you want as your end goal. And so if you look at all these videos of chess grandmasters that find themselves kind of planning 7-8 moves in advance, it's with the expectation that people will react in a specific way or respond to what is being done in a specific way. And so what will differentiate a grand strategist from a strategist is the forethought to that extent, the knowledge of what people are going to do in response to their action. And remember, when something goes wrong, which it will, you should have the ability to trace it back to what caused it in the first place. And emotions cannot be an example or a reason as to why everything went down. I mean, they can be, but rather they shouldn't be, because you should have had the forethought to not rely so much on them. And remember that if you can trace it back, which you should be able to, you are largely the agent of anything that could have gone wrong. Because if you had kind of planned out for something, if you had allowed for these factors that caused whatever to go wrong prior, you would have been able to kind of decrease the chance of this failure. Obviously, certain things we can never control in our lives. Many events that transpire in our lives, we don't have any control over. But little things that we could have forethought or foresaw in the game of politics, maybe dirty or clean politics, could have been avoided if you would have been more prudent. And so these are kind of four principles to look at in terms of grand strategy. Remember that the most important principle of grand strategy is not to act first and wait for disaster to come back later. It's the idea of stepping into the light first, planning out all of this, accounting for failure, setbacks, but playing the bigger game, the game of war, not the game of a battle. However, there are a few issues that can arise from being a grand strategist. The first one is indecisiveness. So someone who is a grand strategist, someone who is able to foresee a lot of events and understand certain events that are happening, the cause, the purpose, the reaction, and everything, will hesitate to choose a path, will be so stuck on the contemplation of the plan that they will never actually execute it. So it's important to balance planning with execution, not investing too much time in one field or the other, but planning the right time to execute your objective. And the second one is the one that we've discussed a lot before: being drunk on your successes. Sun Tzu, who is the author of The Art of War, talks a lot about not only fighting and strategically planning, but when the end has come, that you have planned all the way till the end, so that you do not find yourself so drunk on your success that you miss out on all the benefits that you were looking for in the first place. Robert Greene, in the 48 Laws of Power, one of his laws of power is plan all the way till the end. And all the way till the end includes your success, includes the levity you should have, but the humility you should also have with your success. Not only planning all the way to your goal, to the top of the mountain, but rather the graceful descent from the top to the next mountain you want to find. And so now let's dip a little bit into the Stoic perspective onto grand strategy. And so kind of going into one of the reversals or one of the issues that can arise from grand strategy is inflexibility or indecisiveness. A lot of us kind of follow a route or a discipline every single day, a routine that kind of gives us structure and that kind of allows us to pursue what's important. And that is one of the most important things we can find in ourselves. But investing too much time in a specific routine without questioning it every so often kind of locks you and makes you a prisoner, unwilling to get better than how you are right now. When your life is on the line, and when everything you stand for is on the line, you want to be able to leverage as many weapons as you can in this battle or war. But when all you have is your set routine, you're kind of limited, imprisoned by your own restrictions you put on yourself. This is not kind of a plea to dissolve all routines, to get rid of everything that gives you structure in your life. But it's also healthy to understand and question whether what you're doing at the current moment is best for yourself. Because when all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. Temperance, self-discipline, and unrestrained moderation is not about committing to a regime or routine no matter what, but it's also committing so much to the idea of flexibility, knowing that what you're doing right now may be the best today, but it could be better tomorrow. Our principles cannot and should not change, especially if they're important to who we are as a person and are based on prudent rationality. But other things that are simply the way they are because that's how they were in the past, doesn't necessarily have to stay the same. Because time is never going to be the same. What is today is not going to be tomorrow. We have to adjust as philosophers who are living in the real world, being flexible to any realities of the moment. And the most susceptible people to this are those who are so rigid in their way of life, who are so set on one particular perspective or set of circumstances, that as soon as life throws them a curveball, they shatter. Self-control is not really a life sentence. We are not bound to kind of set our ways of life in stone. It's a way of living that should allow for flexibility, formlessness, and improvement. For without flexibility, you don't really have discipline. Because discipline is not only about setting your mindset in one particular way and not allowing anything to happen to it, but it's allowing your mind to be open to new perspectives. Being flexible enough to adopt your current perspective, provided the next one has the virtues of stoicism and represents who you are as a better person. And it also involves being willing to change, but not sacrificing who you really are for the sake of it. It sounds like a series of paradoxes, but that's what makes it so difficult. Because you must find the balance of flexibility and rigidity, find the balance between routine and learning new things. I mean, you must find the balance between enjoying life and being strategic overall. And that is what self-control and unrestrained moderation is. Because it's not about self-whipping yourself and curtailing any pleasures in your own life, but it's also not about living a life of frivolous frolicking in the fields. So that's what self-control teaches you to do. And grand strategy allows and accounts for that. Regular strategists will look at everything single-dimensionally, look at something that is kind of good for you, or like rather pleasurable, as something bad, because it takes you away from your overall goal. But a grand strategist will allow for rest days, will allow for days where you can frivolously frolic, quote-unquote, if we're going to use the same language, but will always keep the main goal at mind. And the flexibility of strategy is not as present as the flexibility of grand strategy. And that's what differentiates a strategist from a grand strategist. Flexibility. Accounting for not a linear process or a linear set of progress to a goal, but a web and an indirect way of reaching the goal. And finally, being unchanged by success and not becoming so drunk on it that you lose track of what you fought for in the first place. Because the paradox of success is that when we think we've earned the right to relax our discipline, is when we need it the most. When our payoffs are in our hand, that's when we need to relax the kind of grand strategy, but not our discipline. Because the height of power is where you must have the greatest and clearest mind. You must take the most responsibility for your actions. Because that's when it really does matter. It's easy to be humble and modest when you're on the bottom of the food chain. But as soon as you make it to the top, that's where you must be unchanged by the success that you have got. Thank you so much for listening to this episode on the idea of grand strategy, flexibility, along with a few principles necessary to maintain said grand strategy, differentiating yourself between a regular strategist to a grand strategist. If you'd like to hear more content, feel free to drop me a follow at Stoic Spirituality on YouTube, TikTok, and Instagram. And feel free to follow me on whichever platform you listen to this podcast on. Thank you so much for listening, and see you guys next time.